I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
MSW Media.
Rule of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated alike. That there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans, one rule for the powerful, another for the powerless, one rule for the rich and another for the poor, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's clean up on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be clean up on aisle 45.
Hello, and welcome to episode 169 of Clean Up on Aisle 45. It's Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Pete Strzok. And after over 7 years, jury selection has begun in the 2016 Trump election interference trial. We'll go over day one of the trial, along with the Senate judiciary finally starting to issue some subpoenas.
Yes, and we'll also have some updates from Fulton County, and the latest in the New York Attorney General civil fraud case, including an investigation into Weisselberg's perjury, for which he is sitting in Rikers for 5 months. But first, we have some patrons to thank. And thank you so much to our patrons. We could not do this show without you. Linda Hartman, Leslie Bennett, Brad Snyder, Denise Harity, Kayvan, Amy Rebecca, Joaquin Romero, Judith Strunk, Sarah, and Punspector. Thank you so much to all of you for supporting independent media and for supporting this show. We couldn't, like I said, do it without you. So we appreciate you very much. All right, we're going to start in New York with the criminal trial finally underway. Man, how long have we been covering this?
So long.
Yeah, 7 years.
I mean, for you, you were covering it when I was still working. You were covering it with the Mueller She Wrote stuff back as it all started unfolding in the 2017 timeframe.
Yep, before our friendship was even a gleam in my eye, sir. Mm-hmm. I was looking at this stuff way back in the Mueller investigation. And first, I just want to kind of set the scene. Law enforcement had released statements last week saying they're ready to go. The NYPD said planning for high profile security events is very familiar ground for the New York City Police Department. The court security said, in coordination with the Secret Service and the NYPD, we stand ready and able to protect the safety of everyone in the courthouse during this trial, maintaining a secure and safe courtroom environment in facilitating the needs of the court, the trial participants, the media, and the general public. And the Secret Service said that we are prepared to effectively carry out our protective mission here in New York. That's Patrick J. Freeney, special agent in charge at the U.S. Secret Service New York field office. In a statement, he went on to say, while operational security precludes us from going into specifics, the Secret Service will not seek any special accommodations outside of what would be required to ensure the continued safety of the former president. All of this for the about 40 or 50 Trump supporters that showed up at the courthouse today. Of the couple million Trump voters that live within an hour of the courthouse, right? About 40 or 50 showed up. It was pretty quiet at the courthouse today. So, you know, Donald Trump putting out on Truth Social, it was going to be pandemonium and wild, millions of supporters would be there to back him up didn't really materialize today. And I think that that's pretty important to note.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a combination of things. I mean, I think New York City by its nature, spectacle sort of is at a different level. And I think what it takes to get people out is maybe a little different in New York City than probably any other, frankly, any other city in the world. So I think between a certain level of whether it's not caring enough to go downtown, whether it's simply the sort of commitment of time and energy to show up to, you know, to protest or demonstrate, it's easier to drive your MAGA truck to the exit of Mar-a-Lago than it is to you know, kind of go into downtown in New York City. So I think and hope and pray that it will be a safe trial. I don't have the same happy, warm feelings down in Fulton County that I do in New York City for a number of reasons, but, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But it's you know, what I don't like is turning on after trial is done and seeing CNN with a goddamn O.J. Simpson white Ford Bronco style camera footage chasing Trump to wherever he's going. We don't need that. We don't need that. He doesn't deserve it. Don't, you know, I know you got to put something on the screen, but frankly, show me your talking heads. I don't need to see Trump's motorcade driving through New York. Again, by the way, all of that Secret Service detail that you see in front and behind him, that Secret Service officer that you hear giving that statement and all the things they're doing, all of that being done on your taxpayer dollar. Because this man, time and time again, 81 times, accused of violating the law that we're now having to pay for that Secret Service and police and court security and NYPD and everybody else who has to provide security because this fucking asshole couldn't just obey the law.
Oh, we're getting some.
Sorry, forget
the swearing coming through.
5 minutes in, not even on the bonus episode.
Yeah, no, that happened in Miami too when he was arraigned down in Miami. I thought it might have been kind of a zoo-like atmosphere, but, you know, a handful of people showed up. And so, yeah, I'm hoping that the same is true for Fulton County, but it appears to be pretty quiet in New York. So the first half of the day today was spent on pre-jury stuff. Like, first of all, there was an outstanding motion for Justice Merchan to recuse from the case, and that was quickly denied. Then they made a couple of decisions that they'd already made before, that the Access Hollywood tape is not allowed in, the audio is not allowed in, but the transcript is. And I know a lot of folks, I see a lot of folks on MSNBC talking about and CNN talking about how they're actually kind of surprised that the tape isn't allowed in. It's a very strong piece of evidence, but they are going to allow the transcript. So that's where we are with that. Karen McDougal's story is going to be allowed. She is also allowed to testify. At first, there was some, I guess, reporting that perhaps that wasn't going to be allowed in, but it is now allowed in. And they decided that in some pretrial motions earlier, like last week or the week before. So we'll get to hear Karen McDougal's story. Now, she is another person who was part of that catch and kill story with David Pecker and his lawyer over at AMI, which is the owner of the Inquirer, National Inquirer. And that's going, so, you know, she basically had a year-long affair with Donald Trump. And there's other hush money payments here, too, that were meant to influence the election, including the doorman. Remember, they paid the doorman an exorbitant amount of money to keep his mouth shut. So all of that stuff can come in. But one thing that cannot, another thing that can't come in along with the Access Hollywood tape is the deposition of Trump in the E. Jean Carroll case. Remember when he was asked if are stars really allowed to grab people by the genitals? And he was like, oh, yes, for millions of years. He actually said for millions of years, that's been the case, fortunately or unfortunately. And then when asked if he was a star, he said yes. So that is not going to be allowed in unless, I guess, a foundation is laid, but that tape can't come in either. And Trump kind of treated that and his team sort of treated those, the Access Hollywood tape and the E. Jean Carroll deposition tape as sort of wins for them today. You wouldn't have guessed it by his little speech after, the first day was over, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but they had to, you know, they took all the way up until lunch to get all that stuff decided. Blanche was arguing again about some tweets not being allowed in because Trump has some kind of immunity for tweeting when he's president. That was, you know, shut down pretty quickly. One, I think something interesting and important that happened is the prosecutors wanted Cohen's guilty plea for campaign finance violations to come in. So maybe it's to do something called drawing the sting, right? Like to get it out in the open so they can show, also so that they can show that Trump started going after him like the day after he pled guilty, kind of showing intent here to keep these things quiet, right?
Right. And it's totally, not only did he start going after him after he pled guilty, prior to that, he was nothing but compliments and praise for Michael Cohen. So it was like just a
friends in high places.
And yeah. And so it I think is one of those things that not only is it trying to like get out ahead of like the bad things they're going to try and say about Cohen, which I don't think, look, I mean, Cohen lied. He was found guilty of that. I still think he will be a credible witness, but I think it's really, the good news about this is while the judge said, hey, look, you're not likely to bring it in, but given that the defense is going to almost certainly try and undermine his credibility, you're going to be able to bring it up on cross. So I think it will be a very effective way to show. And it was just like, you know, it's like Trump has always done, whether it's with Cohen, whether it's with Flynn, whether it's whoever is in a position to potentially testify against him. He says nothing but nice things until people turn on him, and then he pivots. And that's exactly what he did with Cohen. So, you know, and to me, the thing with this, and again, it was not surprising, and I don't know if disappointed is the right word, but I think it was Von Hilliard on MSNBC. He was talking about trying to go back to the moment in time when the Billy Bush Access Hollywood tape was released and how everybody, including people in Trump's campaign, were like, oh my God, we're done. This is it. We are not going to recover from this. And that, you know, scrambling, he had to go talk to Melania. They were taping statements to be made. And to try, and one, Von Hilliard just like, oh, everybody's memory hold that because of the trauma. We don't think about it, which is unfortunate. But the other thing that's so important, and I know you know this, and most of our listeners, because they were early adopters of listening to the Mueller She Wrote podcast, what is so important at that time is with that critical, that fatal thing, that tape that was going to kill his campaign, one of the primary things that saved him was the almost simultaneous or shortly hours later release of all these DNC DCCC emails that had been hacked by the Russians that immediately took this spotlight off of Trump and this horrible campaign-ending tape, and immediately was all of a sudden focused on her emails again and the things that were going on with, you know, Podesta and everybody else in the Democratic Party, all hacked by the government of Russia. Mm-hmm. And the involvement. And people, like, you know, everybody's eyes glaze over because to understand and remember the totality of 2016 and then 2017 is so hard. But I think what's important to remember is, one, just how critical and horrible a moment this was for the Trump campaign and how devastating. And he was saved by this release of information that the government of Russia had stolen. And that the point you've made time and time again, all of this entire trial is not a result of the New York District Attorney, although he's the one bringing the case. All of this is because of the work of Special Counsel Robert Mueller. And that was the genesis of finding this information, of finding the payments, of digging into it, of subpoenaing records and getting that ultimately into state prosecutors. But if we ignore the genesis of this, if we ignore the role that Russia played in all of this, if we ignore the role that Robert Mueller played, we are missing the forest for the trees, because that's absolutely, you cannot understand what is going on today in New York if you do not understand what was happening in 2016 with Donald Trump and Russia and hacked material stolen by a foreign nation, saving his ass and allowing him to ultimately become president.
Yeah. And then ultimately, as far as this trial is concerned, the fact that the 1-2 punch of the Access Hollywood tape, followed by a potential story that he had an affair with an adult film star. He was, you know, so we had the Access Hollywood tape come out. Then we had all the Podesta DNC DCCC emails come out. Then you did not have the story of Stormy Daniels coming out because it was or Karen McDougal because it was caught and killed, or because there was a hush money payment.
By the way, is it too late for me still to buy a Bible from this man since this is all coming up? I figured now's a good time to get, if I can get one of his Bibles and maybe have him sign it for me, that would be great. And, you know, make it out to Stormy and Karen or something.
Right, with the Bill of Rights in there, right? Yeah, so the fact that this story didn't come out to counter what the Russians had done, we can speculate what that might have looked like or if it would have been a campaign killer, but we'll never know. So that's what this trial is about. It's about election interference. That's what the jury was instructed today in the second half of the day, and we'll get to that shortly. But a couple other things that they had to do before lunch was, first of all, Blanche told the court that Trump wants to be present for everything, including sidebars. And the judge said, well, that could be logistically problematic given Secret Service concerns. But later on, Blanche didn't want Trump to be present for everything, including his son's graduation and the Supreme Court thing. But we'll talk about that in a bit. And then what happened was the judge recited something called the Parker warnings, right? Which means that Donald Trump must be present. And if he's not, he could have a warrant put out for his arrest. And of course, the right wing howler monkeys were like, they're threatening to arrest him. They do that with everybody. These are the Parker warnings.
Stefanik, first and foremost, right? Leading the charge, yep. A proud congresswoman from New York. It's like, okay, great. So this is like literally a requirement for every criminal defendant in the United States of America. But you're fucking party
leader.
It has
a name. It's called the Parker warnings. Do you think they, like, they just started just this today?
Parker, some triggered lib.
Otherwise, it'd be called the Trump warnings. But no, these are the Parker warnings. Also, if he's disruptive, he could be asked to leave and he might forfeit his right to be at the trial. And probably the most important thing that happened, I mean, you know, a lot of the evidence stuff, you know, that's all very important. But Maggie Haberman noted that Donald Trump was nodding off and falling asleep. His jaw was slack, his mouth was open, catching flies. And you know that thing, remember in school where you would nod off, or I did this a lot when I was in the military, going to nuke school. You nod off a little bit and then you realize you're falling asleep. It feels like you're falling. And so you jerk your head up. That apparently happened. So he was falling asleep. And then, of course, within minutes, Don Snorleone and Sleepy Don began trending together, number one in the country for politics. So that was, I think, you know, it's one of those made for TV moments, but it's also, I think, something very important going forward, because it's going to be very hard for him now to talk about Sleepy Joe Biden because he's falling asleep in the first half of his first day of court.
And had it been Joe Biden? By God, that would be all anyone was talking about. And not obviously not just Fox and RSP
Robert
and
Herr would have been,
are, but like everybody, CNN, even MSNBC, the nightly news, people would be talking about Joe Biden falls asleep. But Donald Trump somehow gets past. Now, Trump apparently heard and saw Maggie Haberman because she put it on the New York Times feed, because there's later reporting that after a break, he got up, like surveyed the press, looked at, Alvin Bragg or members of a team, and then like gave her the stink eye for, you know, 20 seconds as he walked out of the room. So he absolutely knows what's going on and what she had said. But he gets past like he always does, because it's so outrageous. It's so unbelievable that, well, we just can't wrap our heads around it. So let's just not consider it. But, you know, Joe Biden, you know, has a, you know, misremembers a, you know, a specific, you know, time period for his son's death. That's all we can talk about. You know, it gets put in a special counsel report about it. It's not equal. It boggles my mind, but you know, we'll see. It's a long trial. I guarantee you this will not be the first or last time Don Snorleone, that's the gift that keeps on, you know, and before that came from like after that, he couldn't
Don
get the
Porleone bail.
He was Don Porleone. It's the gift that keeps on giving. So,
yeah, well, and I mean, certainly, you know, Robert Herr, who pretended that the only reason he didn't bring charges against Joe Biden was because he was a sympathetic old man that would be falling asleep in the courtroom. Well, that didn't stop Alvin Bragg, because now we have an old man falling asleep in the courtroom. And that's not why you don't bring charges. You don't bring charges because you don't have enough evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt and obtain and maintain a conviction. So here we are with this. Now, also, the DA, and I was waiting for this to come up, that the DA was going to bring up right before lunch the potential gag order violations. There's a limited gag order. Trump can't go after, you know, certain people, witnesses, et cetera. And he did that. He in three different Truth Social posts, went after Stormy Daniels, went after Michael Cohen, and then also like called them sleaze bags, and then also claimed that he never had an affair with Stormy Daniels. And the DA asked for a show cause hearing, which means Donald Trump would have to show cause why they shouldn't hold him in contempt of court. And the DA is asking for a $3,000 fine, $1,000 for each of those posts. And that's where you start, right? You start with the small fines. You don't start with jail. I know that's upsetting, but you start with these fines. And Merchan said he would deliberate during the lunch break, but he didn't make a ruling on that when he got back. He set a hearing. And I believe that hearing was initially set for April 24th, but now it's going to be April 23rd.
Right.
But I thought the 22nd and 23rd, they were off court that day, but I think they are for the jury stuff because of Passover, but they're going to have that hearing. And, you know, Donald also has an April 22nd hearing for his bond, which we'll talk a little bit about later. And that's with regard to whether or not he facilitated Weisselberg's perjury, and that, you know, there might be a small, or it might not even be about that. They might only be talking about whether or not this Knight Insurance car loan guy can even be the sureter in this guarantor in this bond. It's just a mess. And then the judge reminded everyone, he was like, hey, you know what? 500 jurors are waiting. So let's go to lunch. Then that's when they took their first lunch break of the trial. And so they all filed out and came back after lunch. And we can talk a little bit about what happened when he gets back, but we do have to take a quick break. So everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, show me in a courtroom how we were at war.
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing in the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, if I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized.
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
Hey, welcome back. We have more new patrons to thank. Don Del Nocentis, Margaret, Holger Tranquier, sorry if I butchered that, Jane Miravasi, Marsha Beckwith, Truth Shout, Upstump the Jiggy with Plump Dump and Jiggy, Ruth Zamoida, Will McKinley, Daniel Narbit. Thank all of you so much for helping support the program and being team members with us on this. You know, it is a ton of data out there in the media these days, and you allow us to sit down and talk to you each week and highlight the important stuff. So thank all of you for your support in making this possible. So let's go stay in New York. So in the afternoon then, Judge Merchan addressed the DA's motion to show cause that Trump didn't violate his gag order. Now, he didn't make a determination from the bench. Merchan says he'd hold a hearing initially, he said, on Wednesday the 24th, and then updated that to Tuesday the 23rd at 9:30. Now, that's still over a week from now, which gives Trump a lot of time as he, you know, sits through and gets agitated to violate the gag order again and again and possibly again. And so then even given that, during lunch, Trump walked right up to the line of the gag order and posted a video of his ally, Laura Loomer, the freak who went after me for apparently she heard being a Muslim this weekend, but posted a video of her, including statements making references to Justice Merchan's wife and Michael Cohen. But before the judge brought in the prospective jurors, Blanche again brought up the late discovery from the Southern District in New York, the feds up in New York, saying that they needed more time to review what he termed the overwhelming additional discovery. Merchan laid the hammer down, saying, look, quote, you have 24 hours to hand over any relevant discovery to the DA or it's precluded from the proceeding. And then at that point, Trump got all animated and personally involved and pushed Blanche to, you know, fight back harder for more time. After that, Blanche asked when he will get the names of the jurors. And the judge reminded everyone that once they have the list, they can't photograph it, can't copy it in any way, and that afterwards they'll have to give the list back.
Mm, yeah, and that makes sense, right? These are anonymized jurors per an order. He anonymized the jury, so the names can't be released to the public. Trump gets the names, the both parties, the defense lawyers and the prosecution lawyers, get the list of names. And they actually can use those to look at people's social media in real time as the jurors are coming up for voir dire. So that's, I think, is interesting. And they have time to do that because each juror has to sit there and orally answer all 42 questions in the jury questionnaire. So, but before the jurors came in, we're all waiting for the jurors to come in, but the parties discussed a Sandoval hearing, right? They have to determine the scope of Trump's testimony if he testifies. That all has to be figured out before the trial begins. A Sandoval hearing is set for Tuesday morning. Now, that's yesterday as you listen to this. We record this Monday afternoon. So that Sandoval hearing is going to be Tuesday morning at 9:30. And like I said, since we record Mondays, we'll have to include the results of that in the next episode. Maybe we'll talk about it on the bonus for patrons this weekend. And like you said, that's when Judge Merchan changed the date of the gag order hearing to April 23rd. So then the 96 jurors, the first batch of 96, made their way through security. And you had to go through security downstairs. Then you got to go up to the 15th floor. And it's a separate bank of elevators. And then you got to go through another magnetometer to get into the courtroom. So they're filing in, and the cameras are off in the overflow room. And Judge Merchan tells the jury, basically says, the allegations are in substance that Donald Trump falsified business records to conceal an agreement with others to unlawfully influence the 2016 presidential election. And at this point, he's talking to all 96 of them, right? And he explained to the jury, you know, the same spiel that he's going to have to explain to each bank of 96 people, that y'all are the finders of fact, and that my role, the judge's role, is to ensure a fair and orderly trial in accordance with the law, and that both sides got a list of all the juror names and the numbers. And again, like I said, they can look up their social media in real time. The judge then explains the burden of proof is on the prosecution, what reasonable doubt is. And Trump started to nod off again at this point. His eyes were closed for quite a while. Then he read possible witnesses in this trial. And this was pretty fascinating. There was like more than 42 people on this list. And it's not that all of these people are going to be called to be witnesses, right? Some of them are just going to be mentioned during the course of the trial. And that is to, you know, basically let the jury know, hey, if you know any of these people, you know, you got to let us know whether or not you can be fair and impartial here. And it includes, you know, Michael Cohen, of course, Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, David Pecker, Hope Hicks, Bradley Smith, who is an expert witness for Trump, Ronna Graff, Madeline Westerhout. She was the one who was like the gatekeeper of Donald Trump, right? She sat right outside the Oval Office. She was the one who brings in the checkbook for him to sign these checks to Michael Cohen. Deborah Tarasoff and Jeffrey McConney, those are Trump accountants. Dylan Howard, he's the other guy over at AMI, the lawyer that who like, and remember the Southern District of New York gave them sort of an immunity, limited immunity, so that they could help testify against Michael Cohen in that case. So that's where Dylan Howard comes in. Weisselberg, Kellyanne Conway, Robert Costello, that's Bannon's lawyer. It's a lot. He's a lawyer to a lot of really great people. Dan Scavino, Bannon himself, Rudy Giuliani, Don Jr., Ivanka, Kushner, Eric Trump. McEntee is on the list. Melania. But again, that doesn't mean they'll all be called, but their names might be brought up at trial. So that was I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and some of those, like Ronna Graff and Westerhout, were the two gatekeepers, both before his time in the Oval Office and during his time in the Oval Office. And so if you want to know the people who sort of like sat, like you were saying, the gatekeepers, the people who knew exactly what was coming and going. I mean, Cohen has some visibility because he was his fixer, but like the day in, day out person who's sitting out front are going to be Ronna and Westerhout. So it'll be interesting to me to see what they testify to, if they do testify, what Hope Hicks does. Because Hope Hicks is interesting because she's managed to get herself off the radar. I don't know what she's doing, and other than her conversation or text or whatever it was, essentially saying we're all effed because of January 6th and we'll never get jobs again, which is the appropriate sanction for working for a man who engaged in an insurrection. I'm curious to see how and if she testifies and what how she frames the data that she might have. Interesting. Keith Schiller, I didn't hear his name, but you know, you might recall that he was, I think, a retired NYPD officer who for a long time was sort of like the Walt Nauta before Walt for Trump. Yep. But he left. But I, you know, if there was one person I would love to have tell me everything, it would be Schiller. But I'm certain that will never, ever happen. But interesting group. And, I don't know. Kellyanne Conway, is she going to testify? I don't know. I'd be curious.
Yeah, no, I don't know either. But the interesting thing, I think probably one of the bigger stories out of jury selection today that we might need to carry forward in the days to come is that after all that, given all the instructions, given all the rules and stuff, he said, all right, raise your hand if you don't think you can be fair and impartial, or if you can't be on this jury for other reasons. Almost 2/3 left. And he just dismissed them, saying they can't be fair or impartial in this case. And that left, what, like 36, 35,
34? 46.
46 jurors left?
Yeah, you know, and some more beyond that were like another 9 were let go for other reasons. You know what, Alison, what bothers me about this is you have a group of people of his peers in New York City who, now look, some people just don't want jury duty. This is a multi-month trial to have to sit there and like stop going to work and hope your work doesn't,
could also be dangerous
against you, get you subject yourself to potential threats and scrutiny from, you know, the seemingly, you know, noxious parts of the MAGA world. If you are somebody in New York and you say, look, I am aware of the fact that this adjudged rapist, which the judge said by the commonly accepted term, you know, understanding of the definition of the word rape, he's a rapist. This man who is a fraudster, found guilty for nearly $500 million. This man who stands accused of lying, of conspiracy, of obstruction, of insurrection. If I sit there and say, you know what, I've heard about all that and I really, I have opinions about this man, which cause me some concern, and I'm going to tell the truth and say, all these horrible things about this person, yeah, that I'm aware of them. Who does that leave you, jury pool-wise? You're going to have a group of people who maybe don't pay any attention whatsoever to anything in our national political discourse, which probably ain't the people I want on the jury. Or you got a ton of potential either neutral and or Trump supporters saying, oh, yeah, I can set my biases aside. I can be objective. That's not the jury pool that I want. I want somebody, and so I don't know. I mean, you know, Merchan, I think he was very lenient in allowing people to like raise their hands to get out of things that maybe he shouldn't. But to the point at the end of the day that you need a unanimous jury to convict, the fact that you had 50 out of 96 say, I can't be impartial, a huge chunk of them probably because they're looking at a rapist, a defamer, a fraud. These are all settled, right? Those aren't allegations.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have minded seeing the judge ask a follow-up question. Why can't you be impartial? I think that might have maybe gone a long way, but it also would have taken a lot of time. And I know they've got hundreds and hundreds of jurors to get through. But yeah, I thought that was... I would have liked a follow-up. Let's just say that. And then after they all left and the nine were let go for other reasons, one by one, they bring them in 18 at a time because there's 18 seats in the jury box for 12 plus six alternates. And they would answer the 42 questions orally in the questionnaire. They went one by one. By the time they got to the third person, that person actually answered in the affirmative on question number 34, which is, you know, do you have any real strong feelings about Donald Trump? And she said yes. She was, I believe she lived in Harlem. She was originally born in Texas, not a native New Yorker. And she said she gets her news from Al Jazeera. And so she was dismissed. And then what happens is as soon as they're dismissed, one at a time, somebody comes in and fills their seat, right? And they just keep kind of doing that until they get through the rest of the day.
Again, and this just sticks in my craw. If you give a damn about American democracy, about this 200 and what are we at, 70-year-plus experiment, how can you not, if you are even vaguely aware of anything going on in the world of Donald J. Trump, how can you not have a strong opinion about him? Now, I can see the answer being like, look, you may have strong opinions, but can you set that aside and just review the facts and apply them to the law? Great. I'm fine with that. But if you're striking people because they have strongly held opinions, if at this point in the United States of America, you do not have a strongly held opinion about Donald J. Trump, how? But Allison, how can you not? How can you look? I am fine with a rapist. I'm fine with somebody who called on China to help. I'm fine on somebody telling Vladimir Zelensky, just gin up some shit on Joe Biden and I'll give you some aid to protect yourself from the Russian invasion. How can you not have a strong opinion about that?
There are people who don't know about that stuff. There are. And that's who these folks want to have on the jury, because they will have an easier time being fair and impartial. I know where I'm steeped in it every day. It would be very difficult for me to not have a strong opinion. I would be stricken from that jury immediately because I host podcasts that they probably will ask about.
And one more thing, Allison, if you don't know, and fine, I got it. You know, I understand. Yeah, I live in DC. I'm very much in this and have been in this for a long time. And yeah, I need to understand that there are people who just don't, politics isn't their thing. If it isn't your thing and you're having to answer those questions and the person sitting 20 feet away from you, staring intently at you as you answer these very personal questions, is both the former president of the United States of America and the presumptive Republican nominee for the president of America, as you answer each one of these, do you think that has an impact on you as you're kind of thinking about all this? I get it. It's a feature, not a bug of our system. It is the due process that I would want if I were in any sort of criminal proceeding, but I don't know that we end up with a representative jury of his peers. And that's just that's a cost we got to pay, I guess, for our system of justice, but it sits uneasy with me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is the system, that we have. Now after those first four, folks read that out, that one person was dismissed. Then they had a Sutton Place resident and that listened to NPR's Up First. He answered yes to question 17, which is, have you or someone you know ever had an education, training, or work experience in the legal field? Because he was a lawyer, he said yes. Then on to the next seat was an Upper West Side resident of 23 years, a bookseller for 6 years, married with 2 children. And he joked, he said his wife is a lawyer, general practice, antitrust. And another, he's also a podcast listener, whatever's on NPR when he's in his car. And he said, in response to one question, he actually said, I feel that nobody is above the law, whether it's a sitting president, a former president, or a janitor. I like that guy. I want that guy on the jury.
Yeah.
Next up, another attorney from the Upper East Side. This all the way, by the way, is coming, all this detail is coming from Tyler McBrien at Lawfare. And the Upper East Side attorney is also a prosecutor for the Bronx County District Attorney's Office. And the judge said, you do this for a living. Can you assure us that you can be fair? And he said, yes. And on question 16, he said, my girlfriend is a finance. She works in finance for a bank, and said, but I honestly don't know what she does. And that got a laugh from the press in the press room. And then the next person was an Upper East Side resident, originally from Chicago. She works in social media marketing. She watches sports, reality TV, gets her news from social media platforms and the Wall Street Journal, and that her dads and brothers and boyfriend all work in finance. So that's pretty much, there was somebody from FanDuel, somebody worked at FanDuel that was there, and they just went through, answered these questions or these questionnaires. They got through about 9 or 10 people, and Judge Mershon was very, very adamant about stopping at 4:30. He stopped at 4:28, let everybody file out of the courtroom, and they're going to reconvene Tuesday, which is yesterday as you listen to this, tomorrow as we record it, again at 9:30. We're going to have that Sandoval hearing probably before they let the jurors in tomorrow to continue with the voir dire. But that was the day. And I think the news of the day was that Trump was falling asleep, couldn't stay awake. And I think that the fact that 50 people couldn't be impartial and got let go is probably the big story as far as jury selection is concerned.
Yeah. And I think we'll get, I mean, keep in mind that they brought in, what, 600, 500 jurors? So, you know, they bring them in and they rotate them through. And so they will seat a jury. I just, again, it is interesting to me. The level of detail that or the standard that they are allowing people to, you know, kind of voluntarily say, nope, I don't want to do it and get out of it. And so we'll see. There's some, you know, favorite parlor game on TV and, you know, talk in DC is like, how long is jury selection going to take? Is it going to be 2 weeks? Is it going to be longer? I hope it doesn't take more than 2 weeks. I mean, we'll see based on today.
Well,
if we've got
on the holidays. Just the holidays alone for the rest of April, there's only about 6 or 7 trial days, jury selection days left in the month of April. So this could go into the first week of May easily. But we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening, what kind of jury they'll get. I, of course, am terrified that they'll have some sort of a mole that will get in and hang the jury. That's my concern. I think that's probably everybody's concern. It can't be extremely easy to pick those people out, you know, looking at just at their social media or having them answer these questions. But because, you know, somebody said, I can't remember who it was, but somebody said if their answers are too good, you also might want to strike that person. Like, well, I can be fair and impartial, you know, like,
reading off the little sheet that they were. And the other one last thing that after the jury left, everybody thought they were done. And then there was one last thing. And Trump's attorney team said, hey, look, Your Honor, this is really unfair. His Supreme Court argument is on the 25th. He really should be allowed to do it. And Merchant's like, well, Judge Merchant, yeah, you know, a Supreme Court case is important, but your client is a criminal defendant in New York. He's required to be here. He is not required to be in the Supreme Court. I will see him here next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, he didn't bar Trump from going to Barron's graduation, which is something else Donald Trump complained about on the courthouse steps afterwards. He just said, we'll see when it comes up where we're at. You know, I think Barron, isn't that who Melania was pregnant with when Trump cheated with Stormy Daniels? I mean,
yes,
it's a very odd.
Indeed. Yeah. Or that,
I think somebody tweeted like, man, if you cared about his birth as much as you care about his graduation, we might not even be here.
Ouch. if assuming you remember his name, because you just talk about my son without like, again, the No.
And then
no
Eric was like, "Can you believe they won't let his go to his son's graduation?" Like, I know that he did not go to Eric's. He couldn't. He probably didn't go to Eric's graduation, and that's why Eric was like. But what, he didn't have a criminal trial excuse back when Eric graduated.
Eric choking down the bitterness to feign outrage.
Oh, man. All right. We actually have a lot more news to get to this week besides the trial, the 2016 election interference trial. But we do have to take another quick break. So everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. That'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We have more patrons to thank, including L. Ross, Gina B., Aaron Karen, Blake Smith, M. Asbury, Stephen Kramer, Helen Hort, Lori Fleming, Chris Pallas, and Lemon Test. Love it. Thank you very much. And let's actually, we'll stay in New York, but we'll leave the 2016 election interference fraud trial. We'll talk about the New York Attorney General civil fraud case instead, because Tish James has doubled down on her request for the court to order the fiscal monitor, Barbara Jones, to investigate whether Trump and Weisselberg facilitated perjury. In a letter, she addressed a note that Trump sent to the court. She says, "On behalf of the Office of Attorney General, we write to very briefly respond to the letter submitted last night by the defendants. Spanning more than 10 single-spaced pages, the defendant's argument boils down to the proposition that the court is powerless to determine if fraud was committed upon it during the course of two separate proceedings because discovery is closed. That is manifestly not the case. The court has inherent authority over any actions that would undermine the integrity of its proceedings." She goes on to say, "Mr. Weisselberg has admitted that he perjured himself during discovery in the trial in this action. The court is well within its authority to determine if defendants and their counsel facilitated that perjury by withholding incriminating documents." Of course, these are the emails between the Forbes reporter and Weisselberg about the size of the triplex apartment. And, you know, we talked about this last week. New York Attorney General went through all the discovery and didn't see those emails, but got them from the Forbes guy. So she wants Barbara Jones to take a look to see whether or not they knew they had those emails, why they didn't transmit them, if they didn't transmit them during discovery. And were Donald Trump and his lawyers facilitating Weisselberg's perjury by withholding those documents? She goes on to say, "The monitor has already been tasked with assessing the defendant's internal controls, compliance functions, and record keeping. the potential failure to properly produce documents in a legal proceeding relevant to the valuation of Trump's triplex plainly falls within the ambit of her authority and certainly within the power of this court to safeguard the integrity of its own proceedings. And even if the defendant's myriad complaints had merit as to the court's ability to modify the monitor's duties or advance an inquiry after trial, the investigative matter remains open, and the court has the authority to appoint a special referee to conduct the inquiry. So again, the discussion on the bond, the hearing that they're going to have is going to be April 22nd. That's a day before his April 23rd hearing back for the election interference trial, which is a few days before the April 25th Supreme Court oral arguments that are going to take place on his immunity issue. And so he's got a pretty packed schedule here, but it's going to be very interesting to see what comes up in that April 22nd hearing, because is it going to be this facilitating perjury situation? Is it going to be the fact that Mr. Hankey and his Knight insurance company doesn't have the money to cover the bond and contracted with Trump that he wouldn't cover the bond if Trump lost, which is the whole point of having a guarantor cover your bond? So or it could be both of those situations, but we'll be tuning in on April 22nd for sure.
Yeah, and I sure do hope that they get into the bond issue, because I mean, we talked about on the bonus episode about the the subprime car loan king Don Hankey, who put up apparently money that he didn't have for a guarantee that he actually wasn't making. And the amazing thing is, Hankey, like so many people in the Trump orbit, gives interviews where they say the quiet part out loud. And this is a quote from Hankey: "We thought it would be an easy procedure that wouldn't involve other legal problems, and it's not turning out that way. We probably didn't charge enough," Hankey said in an interview. And then he continued, "We've been getting a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls. Maybe that's part of the reason he had trouble with other insurance companies." And that's from Reuters reporting, which is great. But yes, that is probably exactly why he had problems with other companies, particularly those who are actually licensed in the state of New York to do these sorts of things. And maybe when you run into people where you have to like just not give an interview to somebody, but actually have to produce facts contained in documents in a court of law under penalty of perjury, maybe that changes things a little bit. So I wouldn't be surprised if Trump rolls out of this hearing without any sort of bond guarantee and is back on the hook to having Eric and Don Jr. scrambling to, you know, call everybody in princes and prime ministers to see if somebody will pony up, you know, the guarantee for the $100+ million that he's on the hook for.
Well, we'll see. We'll know soon. It's next week. So lots of stuff going down next week. It's going to be a busy week.
Yeah.
Busy week for our good friend Rudy.
Rudy, yeah. And this is like, we're going to pivot from New York and let's take a, 2-hour Acela ride down, 3-hour Acela ride down to Washington, D.C., where Judge Beryl Howell has denied Rudy Giuliani's bid to reverse the $148 million verdict in the Rui Freeman and Shea Moss defamation case. She wrote in this release today, quote, "Giuliani's renewed motion urging this court to reverse its prior findings and rulings and to override the jury's considered verdict on the basis of 5 threadbare arguments falls well short of persuading that, quote, the evidence and all reasonable inferences that can be drawn therefrom are so one-sided that reasonable men and women could not have reached a verdict in plaintiff's favor." Continuing, "The jury's verdict awarding plaintiffs compensatory and punitive damages for defamation and intentional infliction of emotional distress caused by Giuliani and his co-conspirators, as reflected in the final judgment, in the amount of $145,969,000 plus post-judgment interest stands." So sorry, Rudy.
Yeah, I think it's funny that Rudy's argument was like, but you have to overturn it because the evidence was so overwhelming that no one would have been able to not find me guilty. Like that, what? That's
threadbare arguments. Okay. Judge Howell's words, 5 threadbare arguments falling well short of the standard.
Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine just sent me a video on Twitter. Apparently Rudy Giuliani just posted a video of himself at Sheridan Church in Tulsa this past Sunday, continuing to claim Ruby Freeman fraudulently handled ballots in the 2020 election. So he continues to defame.
Rudy's going to be standing with a hat in his hand next to a cot at that Tulsa church where he's sleeping because he has no money left to fund his legal defense before he heads to jail in Fulton County somewhere. But go for it, Rudy. Yeah. Fulton County. Or, you know, yeah, Tulsa. Tulsa, I guess, is like, watch your wallet because Rudy's in town.
Yeah. Well, yeah, watch out for the bumper. All right, we have more news to get to, but we have to take one more quick break. So everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
Hey, welcome back. Our last batch of new patrons to thank includes Otto Neal, Becky McHolland, Martin Greaves, Jane Johnson, JB, Debbie Lee, Trump for Prison 2024, Lisa Walden, Annie Bach, and long story short, long past time I started paying. Thank you. Thank all of you so much for your patronage, for allowing us to put this together. You're just amazing supporters and can't thank you enough. And with that, we move from DC down to Georgia for a quick update. So Judge McAfee denied Kathy Latham's request to strike Act 160 from the Fulton County RICO indictment. Act 160 accuses Latham of committing perjury in furtherance of alleged RICO conspiracy to overturn the election. This is, quote, "Defendant Latham challenges Act 160 contained within count one of the indictment, presumably by way of general demur, arguing that her alleged conduct amounting to perjury under Georgia law is, quote unquote, barred by federal law. A general demur challenges the substance of an indictment by asserting its legal invalidity, more specifically, that the indictment fails to allege a crime. The defendant's argument rests on the idea that only the federal government can punish someone for perjury committed in federal court. This means, according to the defendant, only the best people, Allison. This means, according to the defendant, that because her allegedly false statements were made in conjunction with a federal proceeding, the state cannot punish her for perjury in violation of Georgia law. The court finds, however, that the defendant's sole citation is inapplicable because the state has not substantively charged the defendant with perjury. Nor has the defendant provided any authority subjecting overt acts to the pleading standards of a demur." Now, to understand this a little bit, you need to understand what an overt act is versus a charge. the charge might be, think of it something like a bank robbery. Bank robbery is a crime, right? It's a federal crime. There are all kinds of state, local crimes against it. But that crime of bank robbery, to do that, there are things called overt acts that you conduct in pursuit of that crime. So you might like, I went and got a car. I went and got a gun. I put a mask on my head. I wrote a note to the teller. I walked into the bank. All of those individual things, it's not a crime to get a gun necessarily. It's not a crime to put on a mask. It's not a crime to write a note. But those are overt acts that you take in pursuance of the crime. So that's what, you know, the argument is. That's the difference between an overt act versus an actual charge. And this, you know, when we get down to it, this is Act 160. So on or about the first day of September 2022, Kathleen Alston Latham committed a felony offense of perjury in violation of Georgia Law 16-1070A in Houston County, Georgia, by knowingly, willfully, and unlawfully making at least one of the following false statements in deposition in the matter of Curling v. Raffensperger in the United States District Court for the Northern District of Georgia, judicial proceeding, after having been administered a lawful oath. 1. That she was only present at the Coffee County Board of Elections Registration Office in Coffee County, Georgia, for, quote, just a few minutes, unquote, on January 7, 2021. 2. That she only, quote, walked into the front part, unquote, of the Coffee County Board of Elections Registration on January 7, 2021, and, quote, didn't go into the office, unquote. That she had, quote, no idea, unquote, if employees of the Sullivan Stricker met Eric Cheney at the Coffee County Board of Elections Registration Office on January 7, 2021. 3. That she did not see Misty Hampton at the Coffee County Board of Elections Registration Office on January 7, 2021. 4. That her only interaction with Scott Hall at the Coffee County Board of Elections Registration Office on January 7, 2021 was meeting him, speaking to him outside of the office, and then leaving the office. And 5, that she did not see Scott Hall speak to anyone other than herself at the Coffee County Board of Elections Registration Office on January 7, 2021. So again, use that bank robber analogy. The crime, the broad crime, is the perjury offense, right? And then all of these little underlining overt acts. And I love it. I was just in the front part.
Yeah. Well, the thing here is that whole act, all of that perjury is an overt act. It's not she was like, you have to dismiss 160 because only the feds can charge me with perjury. And Judge McAfee's like, nobody charged you with perjury. Next. So this is an overt act. It's an underlying part of the racketeering charge, count one. She wants to dismiss racketeering because one of the overt acts is perjury. It's not a charge of perjury. And I guess he just had to explain that to her. I thought that's why I was laughing at the up top there, is because what? You weren't charged with perjury. You were charged with racketeering. So that I thought was pretty funny. Also, remember one of the fraudulent electors, Burt Jones, who's now the lieutenant governor?
I do.
D.A. Fonnie Willis was recused from investigating him for a conflict of interest, an actual conflict of interest, because she had gone to or set up a fundraiser for his opponent for lieutenant governor. And at the time, back in the day, when he was doing the fraudulent elector stuff, he was a state senator. And so she couldn't prosecute. The DA's office was removed from prosecuting Burt Jones because of that conflict of interest. And that was removed by Judge McBurney early on, before McAfee got the case. And then what happened was, it goes over to this guy named Pete Scandalakis. He's a state prosecutor. And they say, all right, you find somebody, Pete. Not you, Pete, but Pete Scandalakis, to prosecute Burt Jones. Pete Scandalakis is like, okay, we'll do. 21 months later, they still don't have a prosecutor for Burt Jones. So Scandalakis appoints himself to investigate Burt Jones.
Yeah. The best part I saw on this is, and just looking this up now, that Jones immediately issued a statement, quote, I'm happy to see this process move forward and look forward to the opportunity to get the charade behind me. Fonnie Willis made a mockery of this legal process, as she tends to do. I look forward to a quick resolution and moving forward with the business of the state of Georgia. So, I don't know Scandalakis. I do know that that's a mighty, mighty long time to wait, 21 months, 3 months short of 2 years. But, tapping yourself and say, yeah, I'll take it. Well, see how
that
goes.
Why didn't you take it 21 months ago? What we don't know is how many people he tried to reach out to, or, you know, how many people he asked and looked into. What we have no idea the body of work he put into this, whether he did anything or nothing and then just decided, oh, we're getting long in the tooth, I'll take it myself. We have no idea about how that went down. I'll keep following really great reporters like Anna Bauer and folks over at Atlanta Journal-Constitution to keep an eye on that, to see if they get any more information about what took so long and what steps he took to try to find a prosecutor, Scandalakis, that is, before he just gave it to himself. But we'll keep an eye on that and, let you know as that unfolds. But anyway, that's what's going on down in Fulton County these days.
Yeah. And let's finish up by going back to Washington, D.C., where the Senate Judiciary Committee finally appears to be doing something. This is from CNN. Senate Democrats on Thursday issued a subpoena to a conservative legal advocate they're investigating in response to a series of ethics controversies at the Supreme Court involving lavish travel and gifts to justices. Months after voting to authorize the subpoena, the Senate Judiciary Committee formally issued one to Leonard Leo, Committee Chairman Dick Durbin said. Democrats say the subpoena is necessary to better understand whether specific individuals and groups have used undisclosed gifts to gain access to the justices. This is a Durbin quote. Mr. Leo has played a central role in the ethics crisis plaguing the Supreme Court, and unlike the other recipients of information requests in this matter, he has done nothing but stonewall the committee. Durbin's statement to CNN and continues, the subpoena is a direct result of Mr. Leo's own actions and choices. Now, Leonard Leo's attorney, David Rivkin, sent a letter back to Durbin asserting that he is, quote, not complying with what he termed the unlawful and politically motivated subpoena. Now, the committee voted along party lines in November to authorize subpoonas for Leo and GOP megadonor Harlan Crow, the owner of the luxury yacht where Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas took what any one of us could easily take after flying on a private jet to get to Southeast Asia and, you know, hop on a yacht, a mega yacht to sail around Southeast Asia or the Mediterranean a few years before.
Let him have
just everyday people, just salt of the earth. Clarence Thomas in his RV stopping in the Walmart parking lot because he's a man of the people and that's where he likes to hang out when he's not on a Harlan Crow owned mega yacht cruising around in Indonesia somewhere. But so those, they authorized subpoenas for both Leo and Harlan Crow in response to revelations of the travel accepted by several Supreme Court justices, not just Clarence Thomas, but also Samuel Alito. Now, surprisingly enough, you'll be surprised to hear that these lavish trips that Crow gave to Thomas initially went unreported on Thomas's financial disclosure reports, according to a series of reports in ProPublica. Leo arranged for a 2008 fishing trip attended by Alito, according to a ProPublica report. Similarly, you'd be shocked to hear, Alito did not report this trip on his financial forms. Now, it's not clear why Durbin, who's an Illinois Democrat, waited months between the vote to authorize the subpoenas and actually going ahead and issuing one. Committee vote last fall broke down in partisan rancors. Republicans accused Democrats of playing politics and walked out of the hearing. If Leo ultimately does not comply, Democrats could be forced to hold a vote and find 60 votes in the split chamber to enforce it. Now, again, I'm curious what you think. I mean, this all brings up the question about, like, why now? Why wait that long? Why wait until April? You know, my sense is twofold. I don't think they have 60 votes. I don't think they'll get there with enough Republicans. And the other thing, I think you wait because it will take a few months to fight through this process. And that means we are going to all be talking about it. The press is going to be talking about it. This fight is going to be going on in April and May and June and July of the election year. So I hope, I'm extending a, you know, like a bit of like strategic forethought to Dick Durbin that, well, if we can't get this 60 vote threshold we need, let's at least put the debate in the middle of election season. So I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I don't know either. I do know that the attorney general in D.C., not the U.S. attorney, but the attorney general named Schwab, is criminally investigating Leonard Leo's network of nonprofits and whether he was personally enriching himself from the donations that he got to his network of dark money nonprofits. So, and he's gotten a lot of blowback on that. He's gotten Republican state attorneys general trying to throw their, you know, muck up the works. He's got Jim Jordan and Comer and the House Republicans trying to, you know, demand all this stuff and subpoena his office for all sorts of things as he tries to investigate this criminally. So we'll see where that ends up as well. But again, like you said, the nexus of all this might be right at election time in a post, the first post Roe election in a year or two when everybody is questioning the legitimacy of the Supreme Court. So I don't know if it's political. I don't know if it's not, but it's nice at least to see these subpoenas go out. But you're right. I don't think they have the votes. We'll keep an eye on it, though. All right. I think we got through all the news for the week.
Shockingly enough, it won't last.
No. And we'll be keeping an eye on what goes on, obviously, during jury selection over the next week, 2-3 weeks, however long it takes. And we'll keep you posted on that. We'll definitely go over it in detail on next week's public episode. We might talk a little bit about it on our bonus episode for patrons this weekend. And also, depending on what other news drops this week, it's not going to slow down at all. The news hasn't slowed down at all since everybody came back from the new year. So I don't imagine we will have a dearth of things to talk about. If you're a patron and you support us at the $2 level, you get that bonus episode. You get a whole extra episode every week. So thank you again to our patrons. Thanks to everybody for listening. It's not, you know, the patrons, seriously, you really do help us out a lot. But everybody who listens to this show, just listening really makes a difference. And we really do appreciate it. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Do you have any final thoughts before we get out of here on day one of the Trump?
Yeah, we're running. Whether you are in taking PT tests in the Army, taking PT tests in the Bureau, running a race, you're prepping, and everything that goes into it, all the anticipation, all the nerves, getting there to the day where the starting gun goes off and you're running, we're running. Trial's underway, right? And I cannot wait to meet so many patrons this Saturday. Thank you for your support. Really looking forward to that. But the race is underway. We're running. And so all of that prep, all the waiting, all the what ifs, what's going to happen, we're going. Up in New York. So
months ago, when we scheduled this MSW meetup for dinner, cocktails and mocktails this Saturday, we would be right in between the first week of the first criminal trial of the former president and right before the hearing on the 22nd, hearing on the 23rd. We got another oral arguments at the Supreme Court on the 25th. I mean, I could never imagine that we would be right in the middle of the beginning of this race. So thank you very much. I look forward to seeing everybody on Saturday. And Pete, thank you for joining me on this podcast. I'm so thankful that you're my co-pilot.
Yeah, it's been great. And again, it's not a sprint. We got at least 26 miles in front of us, if not more. So
it will be frustrating.
It's not a marathon. It's going to be like some Iron Man from hell. But we've got a long way to go. But at least we're running. So that's always felt like once you're moving, it may suck. It may be painful, but at least you're moving. So let's go.
I can't wait to meet you all in a few days. Think Smokey, but think Eastbound and Down. Right? You got to. There's
a long way to go and a short time to get there.
There's a party in Atlanta and there's beer in Texarkana. And it's a long way to go. So we'll talk to you next week. We'll see patrons this weekend. Thanks very much. I've been Allison Gill.
And I'm Pete Strzok.
Clean Up on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo designer by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP,
comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.